Welcome to the Honestly Carly podcast, the truth about staying strong, sane, and seen in midlife. This is the podcast where fitness, hormone health, and real life collide, hosted by me, Carly Corrigal, midlife PT and former lawyer. I'm here with honest conversations about what it actually takes to feel incredible over 40, because yep, that's still possible. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Honestly Carly podcast. I'm Carly Corrigal, and today I wanted to chat to you about something which comes up a lot in my conversations with fellow midlife women, which is this. Why is it that I can't tolerate booze like I used to? Why am I such a lightweight these days? And why do I seem to have hangovers that last for 3 days? Is it time for me to give it up? Now, anyone who knew me in my 20s or 30s, particularly when I was a lawyer, would find it hilarious that I am doing an episode about alcohol, because it's fair to say I have enjoyed drink in my time. I've enjoyed my nights out. I did not have much of an off switch back in the day, but since I hit my 40s, I have experienced things which have seriously maybe reconsidered my relationship with alcohol, and now it is not something I indulge in regularly. But I want to give you the facts. That is only ever my aim with this podcast, to give you the facts to enable you to understand your body better. And once you do that, you can make a decision about what's right for you. But I don't want you thinking this podcast has been created by somebody who is holier than thou, that has never touched alcohol and just thinks that nobody should ever touch alcohol. It really isn't. But I wanted to do this little deep dive so that you have all the facts. And this podcast is going to go out at the start of December, when no doubt you are awash with invites, you popular little things, to Christmas drinks. Maybe you're thinking about your plans for Christmas, for New Year, and you might want to think about this when you're factoring in what you're going to be doing. And that is all I'm doing. No judgment, okay? Just the science and the facts. So let's dive right in. First things first, do you feel like your hangovers are horrific and you can literally only tolerate a couple of drinks before you just feel like you've really had enough, okay? If you do, you're not alone. This is 100% a thing, and it is to do with our changing physiology in midlife, not solely related to hormones, it seems, but nevertheless, definitely a part of getting older. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but it is. So what is going on, my friends? Well, your tolerance didn't mysteriously vanish. Your physiology changed. I couldn't get the words out there. It's like I've had a couple of sharpeners. I promise you I haven't. What's going on? Well, a couple of things, really. Firstly, as I've talked about in previous episodes, generally speaking, your lean mass, so that's your muscle, tends to decline as you get older. And it's the loss of this lean mass plus the loss of some of your total body water content in midlife, which can mean that your tolerance to alcohol lessens. Because what is happening is your blood alcohol content is going to rise more quickly and it's going to stay more elevated. And the reason it will stay elevated is because we lose some of our liver processing enzyme called alcohol dehydrogenase, which breaks down alcohol in our systems. And it's to do with these physiological changes, but they become more marked as we head through midlife, okay? So this is the age-related part. There is also a hormone-related part, which is quite interesting. So what we know, and I've talked about this in previous episodes, is that we tend to have these big fluctuations in estrogen in perimenopause, followed by a sort of total drop off as we head through the menopause years and beyond. Now, the other thing which I think is really interesting, and I would say I've done a ton of research before doing this episode for you today, and there is kind of a lack of really solid evidence on this, but there definitely seems to be a link between perimenopause, menopause, and something called histamine intolerance. Okay, so what the heck is histamine intolerance? What else? What else am I intolerant to, you're thinking? Well, let me explain. No doubt you have heard of histamine in the context of antihistamine. So little tablets that we take when we've got hay fever or when you've got pet allergy, something like that. Now, histamine is what will give you that allergic style reaction. And some women report in midlife feeling almost as though they are allergic to booze. And it just so turns out that alcohol, particularly red wine, I think, contains a lot of histamine. Okay, so symptoms that you might experience could be those that are quite similar to allergic reaction. Now, I'm not talking about anaphylactic shock here. I'm talking about things like a stuffy nose. I'm talking about rashes, hives, itching, migraines, maybe anxious thoughts, possibly even an exacerbation in things like irritable bowel syndrome, IBS. Now, is that landing? You're thinking, oh, hang on. Yes, that is ringing a bell. Well, this could be related to your hormonal status and histamine intolerance, because in perimenopause, when we have these big peaks of estrogen, because just remember that estrogen can be really high and it can also be really low, we are exacerbating the effects of having this high histamine. So it's possible as well that you could develop something that seems a bit more like an allergic reaction because of what your hormones are doing. Woohoo! It's fun all the way, isn't it? So there's a few factors at play here, but what you need to know, my main takeaway from this, is that actually you're not imagining it, okay? We know that alcohol clearance is slowing after the age of 40, especially with fluctuating estrogen, okay? We know that your body is less able to deal with the alcohol that you're putting in. So the same drink now results in a higher blood alcohol concentration than in your 20s and 30s, and it takes longer to clear. Okay, so you're not imagining it. You are not imagining it. This is an absolute thing. Okay, point number two, my friends. I would also throw into the mix that alcohol is likely to make symptoms even worse than they already are, in particular those vasomotor symptoms. So these are the ones that affect your blood vessels. So things like hot flushes or hot flashes, depending on where you're from, night sweats, palpitations, that sort of racing heart feeling, anything of that ilk. Anxiety also would affect things like your mood swings, how full of rage you feel, your low points. And there's a couple of reasons for this. So alcohol is a vasodilator, so it itself will open up your blood vessels. Okay, now changes in your hormones will have the same effect, so you're basically pouring fuel on that fire, which is not great. We also know that alcohol affects your brain chemistry. You get that dopamine hit when you have your first drink, but then that quickly crashes off the edge. We know how badly we can feel the anxiety the next day. And actually, when you haven't got your hormones in check as well, the two coming together is like this perfect storm. Okay. The trouble is, I think, that as women, it's often really, really hard midlife. So you might be using alcohol as a little bit of your coping strategy. Some people use it to help them nod off at night. I'm going to come onto that in a moment. But you might be using it just to feel better, to get that, like, I'm relaxing at the end of the day. But actually, it is making everything much worse behind the scenes, okay? It's really not ideal. It kind of soothes and then it stings. So definitely something to bear in mind. Okay. Sleep. Sleep is already really hard to come by in midlife, and there is no doubt about it. Alcohol is a sleep stealer of toddler-like proportions. It absolutely is. So what does alcohol do to our sleep? This is all quite bleak, isn't it? But I really want you to have the facts here. That is my whole premise, is for you to understand what's going on with your body. And also, hopefully, when you listen to this, you're like, oh, actually, this makes sense. This makes sense. So what does alcohol do? Well, it will help you fall asleep because it has a sedative effect. So yeah, that is not in question. However, and you will probably relate to this, it destroys the second half of your night. And that is because of the effect it has on your brain, which means it suppresses the REM sleep. So the REM sleep is your dreaming sleep, and it's kind of when your brain does all its filing. It's the stuff when it cleanses itself of all of the things that have happened in the day. And what will happen is you'll nod off really quickly, but then your brain won't be able to stay through a full sleep cycle of REM sleep. You're likely to get more wake-ups, possibly because you need the loo or you've got a really dry mouth, okay, as well. But it means that your deep recovery, and particularly the recovery of your brain, is really impacted, okay? And we know that the changes in our hormones as we head through perimenopause and menopause really can affect our sleep negatively. It's one of the main reported symptoms and concerns of women of our age. So this is really doubling down, okay? And we know that when we are sleep deprived, okay, our appetite is increased, our emotional regulation, our ability to keep ourselves kind of in check is completely thrown out the window, okay? So consider this. If you are really struggling with your sleep, alcohol is only going to make that worse, all right? In effect, it's kind of borrowing fake sleep up front and then paying it back with interest at 3 a.m. I really want to say to you, dial into how it makes you feel. If you have a drink, even one drink, do you find that you wake up feeling unrefreshed the next day, even if you think you've been asleep for the same amount of time as usual? If you track your sleep on a watch or an hour ring, something like that, what's it telling you? What is it telling you in terms of your resting heart rate? Is that elevated through the night? I know from personal experience, if I have even one drink, it raises my resting heart rate. It comes back to that vasodilating effect that we talked about before. And that means my heart is essentially working harder whilst I'm asleep. It also affects my HRV, my heart rate variability. Now, this is the gap between the beats in your heart rate, because contrary to what you might think, your heart shouldn't be like a metronome. It should be able to flux and vary. So this is sometimes a measure of your resting stress. And I could do a whole pod, in fact, maybe I will, on HRV. But alcohol can really negatively affect your HRV. So it's a sign of underlying stress. Just be really honest with yourself about what it's doing to your sleep, especially if you're kind of a girl that goes, I don't drink, you know, a couple of nights a week, I might have a glass of wine. Just consider that. It might not be that you're not going on a full out binge, but it will still be having an impact on your sleep and recovery. Okay, that leads me neatly in to point four, which is what it does to our exercise progress. Because as you know, I'm all about getting you stronger, fitter, healthier than you've ever been before, okay? Because that is absolutely possible in your 40s. But is your Pinot or your Prosecco undoing your progress, my friends? I would say that probably it is. What we know from research is that women in midlife already need more recovery. And because of the loss or some sort of diminution, shall we say, in our growth hormones, so we've got our estrogen and our testosterone in midlife, we're already kind of trying to swim against the tide. It's like we're swimming upstream here, because those are the hormones that help us build our muscles and perform at our best, and they are in short supply. Now, alcohol kind of blunts this and pushes this further away, because it directly seems to impact that response of those growth hormones. Now, it will come as no surprise to you that the studies on this have mostly been done on men, and they are small scale studies, but it's a solid premise in science that actually, if you are trying to build your body up, okay, you are essentially breaking it back down again with alcohol. So you are making life harder for yourself. What we do seem to know is that there is a slower rate of glycogen restoration. And what do I mean by that? Well, this is our body's energy stores, if you like. Now, if you go and do a run, for example, you deplete some of those stores in your muscles and your potentially in your liver. And what happens when you take on board alcohol is it slows your body building them back up again. So you are going to get a slower recovery in that sense, okay? Also, as we've talked about, your sleep's going to suffer. We know sleep is really, really important when you're looking to make gains in your fitness. So you're just pushing yourself further and further away, I think, as well. But just in terms of your body composition, if your aim is to lose some weight, then alcohol is a real, I mean, it's a total counterforce in that regard, because it's going to supply you with a lot of calories, but they are empty calories. There is no nutrition there at all. Okay. So however, whichever way you cut it, there is no nutrition in there. So you're getting a hit, which is really calorie dense. And I don't like to focus too much around calories because that's not part of my narrative. I don't think that's hugely relevant. However, you're not getting much in the way of nutritional benefit in return. And also, we all know the next day or even later that evening when you've had a drink, you just have this craving for like the salty, or even sugary the next day, fatty snacks, and it's your body's like mechanism that kicks in. It messes around with your hunger and your satiety cues. So it's not always that, you know, little bottle of beer that you have. It's like, oh, and I really want some crisps to go with it. It's that, or the next day, that bacon sandwich, that kind of eschewing of anything green because you're like, well, can't actually face it. It's that knock-on effect that it has. And all in all, in midlife, when we're really trying to do a lovely, nurturing, deep dive into looking after our bodies, it's just counterproductive, isn't it? On the subject of nutrition, I want to talk about nutrient depletion. And really, like, the studies on this tend to be in people who are alcohol dependent. They are kind of long-term, heavy, chronic users of alcohol. However, what we know is that B vitamins and folate drop with regular drinking. You're going to lose magnesium because alcohol has a diuretic effect. It flushes through your body, makes you go to the toilet. You know this, makes you want to wee more. Also, our vitamin D metabolism and our calcium absorption are impacted. And these are like center stage for bone health in the long term. Lots of us will be taking a vitamin D supplement, but then, you know, it's going to be impacted if you are a regular drinker. So all of these things are essential for your mood, for your nervous system function, for your muscle repair, for your bone density. It's every drink that you're taking on board kind of borrows from tomorrow's vitamin and mineral bank. And I just think that is really worth bearing in mind when you're trying to eat well, you're trying to do the right thing by your body. Could you be very much sabotaging? Need to really be able to enunciate these words. Sabotaging your efforts. Okay. Finally, if I have not made the case strongly enough to you for having maybe a little rethink about alcohol, I wanted to talk about the headlines, and I wanted to talk about zooming out and looking at the long-term risks, because I think this is sometimes where the truth lands. And so much of what I want to get across is that we are not just looking at our health now. We are looking at our health in the next 20, 30 years. I say this all the time. I want to be bounding up the stairs in my 80s, and I want you coming with me, all right? I want to live a long, healthy, disease-free life if I can, okay? Now, we'll often see those headlines like, oh, red wine is good for your heart, or your bones will benefit if you take moderate drink. And how do we begin to unpick this? Well, I've had a good old look at the studies for you, so I want to give you the actual facts here. So what we do know is that menopause generally puts a burden on the cardiovascular system. Cardiovascular disease, heart attack, is the biggest killer of women post-menopause. So just let that land. And we know that alcohol is going to lead to unfavorable shifts in your cholesterol. It's going to lead to an increase of that visceral fat, that deep fat that pads around your organs. It's going to put you at a high risk of developing cardiovascular disease. And there are some nuances, some studies that seem to show, oh, red wine had a positive benefit. But overall, to be honest, it's such a tiny, nuanced discussion. I think it's really hard to throw that into the mix and go, there we go, that's your proof, okay? The other thing that we are starting to talk about, which I think is really important, is dementia risk, which is a big one. Okay, so there was a 2025 study, which was an observational and genetic study and the largest of its kind to date, and it was an older adult, so I think they were between the ages of 56 and 72, but it concluded that any level of alcohol consumption may contribute to dementia risk. I think that's really worth bearing in mind if you are at all concerned about dementia risk, okay? There has been some mixed evidence around bones. And I've definitely seen a headline along the lines of that alcohol consumption can increase bone density in older adults. So this is actually true, and I'm all about giving you the facts. As I say, I'm not choosing studies to suit my own narrative here. There have been some small-scale studies that show an increase in bone mineral density, so that's density of your bones, in light drinkers. So that was drinkers that were having less than 3 alcoholic drinks a week. But that risk goes up over 3 drinks per week. So it's very, very nuanced, isn't it? It's like if you're drinking next to nothing, you might get an increase, and you might. This is very, very personal, but if you have any more, then the risk is getting worse. So is that really worth it, particularly if you put it in the context of the wider health conversation? The other thing to mention is the cancer risk, and alcohol undoubtedly increases your risk of quite a few different cancers, including those of the mouth, of the throat, breast cancer. And I think it's worth talking for a minute about how people still believe there is this really high risk of developing breast cancer when taking HRT. And yet we don't tend to think about alcohol in the same way. But because it's socially acceptable, we tend not to have that discussion or think about it in the same way. And as I say, I'm not looking to scaremonger or frighten anybody, but I think we do need to think about this objectively, impartially, okay? Because often the headlines, they only focus on one thing. And let's face it, we all love a bit of clickbait. We all love going, oh, that's really interesting. I'm going to click through and see what that says. But we have to look at the whole picture here. It's really, really important. Okay, my friends, has this been real doom and gloom? I hope not. I hope not. I just want to be really honest with you. That is only ever my aim. And I would love you to think of this as a bit of a reframe, okay? It's not necessarily about never drinking, although if you are sober curious, then that is fab. Give it a go. I hope it works for you. I think there's a few things that I would think about if this episode has landed, which is trying to cut down and trying not to have it all in one go. It's the classic don't binge drink advice, okay? I would definitely keep your booze away from training days. Having alcohol-free days, particularly on those training days that you were at the gym, that you are doing your, well, actually any exercise, quite frankly, just literally keep it away from those because it is going to blunt your potential gains. I would definitely think about whatever else you're drinking and eating around those days when you are going to have a drink. You need to be really hydrated because, as we've talked about, you know, your blood alcohol concentration is much higher when you're dehydrated. So really think about that and make sure that you are having really satisfying food. Literally the old advice, lining your stomachs, making sure you're eating well around it. So you keep that really nutritious diet to support you and help your body to get rid of that alcohol, to clear it from your system afterwards. And so you're not left in this status of nutrient depletion afterwards. You could always try a little mini experiment. I just would say, do not go for like all out December followed by dry January. That is not the point, okay? There's no time like the present, okay? And focus on how you feel. You could do, you know, 30 days, how many days of January? 31 days alcohol free and make sure that you're strength training in that time and you're really looking at your nutrient density and see how you feel. You know, you are your own little experiment, my friends. Give it a try and see how different you feel afterwards. That is what it's all about, you know. It's about optimizing how you feel and doing what is right for you. No judgment from me, let me tell you. And I am here to support you every step of the way in whatever you choose. Right, that was a fact-heavy episode, wasn't it? But I do aim to bring you that each and every time. If you have any questions, then drop in on my Instagram at Carly Corrigal. I will pop the link in the show notes so you can dive right in there and let me know what your thoughts are or if you have anything else you'd like me to look into. Also, kicking off in January, hot off the press, I am going to be running a little challenge all about building healthy habits. Now, it's free to join. I'm going to give you lots of support and we're really going to kick off January the right way. Okay, I'm going to put the link to the challenge because you do need to sign up in order to be the first to hear about it and to get all of the information when we go live in January. I'm going to put the link to do that in the show notes. Right, my friends, have a cracking week, whatever you are up to, and I will see you soon. Thank you for listening to Honestly Carly. If you love today's chat, then why not share it with a friend? Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you're feeling really kind, leave a 5-star review. I'll see you next time for more honest chat and science-backed strategy for feeling strong, confident, and capable in midlife. Have a great week.